you're listening on our public feed, which includes a shortened version of this episode. To hear the extended version and get access to our bonus shows, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or at fmpods.com.
This show is a part of the FM Podcast Network, the home of great music podcasts. Visit us at fmpods.com.
You are listening to the Dilettantes Podcast.
Hey everyone, I'm Jim Salvucci of the Dilettantes, and welcome to the latest installment of Million Dollar Bash.
It's that Million Dollar Bash.
The 1974 album, Planet Waves, marked a series of firsts for Bob Dylan. It was his first official album with the band. It was his first record not on the Columbia label. And it was, believe it or not, his first number one album. The music represents, if not a return to form, a reset after the release of Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid and the Columbia-compiled revenge album called simply Dylan. Compositionally, it's a musical way station between 1970's New Morning and 1975's Blood on the Tracks. The songs feel personal and even at times intimate, and the influence of the band on the music is unmistakable, particularly Robbie Robertson's always superb lead guitar and Garth Hudson's meandering organ, which constantly threatens to explode the arrangements, even paradoxically, though, it's what holds them together. Dylan's harmonica is pretty special, too. The album's opener, On a Night Like This, is a jaunty accordion-driven love song. The lyrics are simple, rhyming night like this with touch of bliss, for instance. It stands in contrast to the magisterial cast iron song that follows, Going Gone, with its heavy guitar work and heavier lyrics speaking of the top of the end. And that song, in turn, gives way to the outright jocularity of Tough Mama with her meat shaking on her bones, which leads to the torch ballad, Hazel. Don't worry, I'm not going to catalog the album's 10 songs and 11 tracks here, but it's worth noting that discrepancy, 10 songs but 11 tracks. That's because there are two versions of Forever Young, the most famous song on the album and a perennial favorite. One is the anthemic hymn we are most familiar with, which closes side one of the vinyl album. Side two opens with the same song done as a country rock honky-tonk. This song, by the way, was quoted by Howard Cosell when Muhammad Ali defeated Leon Spinks in 1978. It occurs to us that Bob Dylan struck the proper note in his great song, Forever Young. May your hands always be busy. May your feet always be swift. May you have a strong foundation when the winds of changes shift. In 1980, Cosell reprised with, Even Muhammad Ali cannot be forever young. His hands are no longer busy. His feet no longer swift. If Cosell were still alive, maybe I'd watch more sports broadcasts. Planet Waves probably lands on a few fans' list of Dylan's top 10, but it still likely occupies a special place in their playlist of albums. It's highly listenable, offering a variety of song genres from rock to ditty. There's a darkness mixed in with the joy. For instance, the grave dirge is sandwiched between the rollicking version of Forever Young and the loveliness of You Angel You. I first found the album when I was in college in the early 80s, and I've loved it ever since. Again, not because it is such an objectively great album, but because it feels great. It also has my all-time favorite personal misinterpretation of a Dylan lyric. Imagine how chagrined I was to learn after years of mishearing dirge that the mediocre line, in this age of fiberglass, I'm searching for a gem, wasn't the delightful verse I'd imagined. In this age of fine repast, I'm searching for a jam. What can I say? Sometimes the ear improves Dylan. So with that, let's meet today's Million Dollar Bashers. And we're going to start with Court Carney. Say hi, Court.
Hi, everyone.
Up next, Erin Callahan.
Hey, everyone. Great to be here.
Ray Lee Hearn.
Good to see you and hear you as always.
And last but not least, Rockin' Rob Virginio.
Thanks very much, Jim. Glad to see everybody today.
Yeah, great to see everyone. Unfortunately, Nina Goss could not make it today, so hopefully we'll get her back in next month. All right, so let's get our very long stream hot takes on this album.
I feel like just as a one-off, I've already shared my very hot take that this is a rare Dylan January release. It was released the day after my actual birth, so I'm just going to accept it as a gift.
Yes, and I think I told you it's a shame that your parents didn't name you Hazel.
I love that song. So maybe it is a shame.
How did you all first encounter this album?
I think Carrie Winscott introduced it to me. And so my good friend, who was my Dylan buddy, and I think we just listened to it over and over again one summer. Just it became the album of the summer. And so it seems pretty appropriate. And I love it because it takes me back to that moment in time, which was really before I became a full-fledged adult. And so there's a sense of innocence to it that I really cherish about it.
How old were you? Do you remember?
My 20s, early 20s.
Okay. So you weren't a full-fledged adult until when? Like your 30s?
Oh, no. I don't even know if I am now. I would say probably grad school, I'm sure.
Okay. How about you, Court? When did you first encounter this album? Do you remember?
I was a big David Geffen fan in 1974, and so I was following what he had been doing. I was zero at this point. I'll have to tip my hat. I was not alive when this was released. I think this was a period, probably in my 20s, where I was really into the band. And I went into this period where I listened to Rock of Ages every day, that kind of period we've all kind of been in. And I think that's when I first clocked it. I don't think I clocked it through Dylan really as much as the band. And I didn't know what to do with it. It wasn't a record that I went to a lot. It's a record I listen to a lot now. I actually really like this record, and it's a record that has like a vibe to it. And then I used to think it was a vibe that fell apart when you listen to the particular songs, but I don't think that's really that true. I think it's a fine record. It reminds me of a record like, I know everyone puts it in the New Morning category. There's a great line on Reddit where it's like, this is New Morning after it went drinking or went out drinking or something. But I like it. I think it's in the meta world, like Street Legal, that record that every few years people rediscover. It's like, did you ever know about Street Legal? And like, I think now we're in a period of Street Legal revitalization, but we're constantly revitalizing these records. But I think this is the same kind of thing. It's not a record that probably said too much to me at the beginning when I first heard it. But I really do like it without trying too hard. I really do like it.
It's easy to like. I agree with Court. And I came to it from listening to the Basement Tapes a lot and listening to the band albums and being really intrigued about how, because the band, of course, developed their own sound on those albums. And to a certain degree, this is a kind of meeting of the kind of Dylan-influenced ambiance of those Basement Tapes. And he's, to a certain degree, giving the band space on a lot of these songs to amplify the sound that they've created on their own albums. So, like Court, I came to this album through listening to the band. Listening to the band, of course, followed for me an immersion in the Basement Tapes and wanting to see what they pulled out of the basement. And so, yeah, I find it does have this kind of vibe that hangs over the entire album. It's broken to a certain degree in songs like Dirge, which kind of foreshadows Blood on the Tracks, which to me, Blood on the Tracks casts a shadow over this album. Right. In many ways, especially in some of the songs where Dylan touches on memories of his past. And I find, and we'll talk about this in more detail when we talk about individual songs, but the wonderful way on Blood on the Tracks where he interweaves the perplexities of relationships and memory, it doesn't quite come to that on this album. But I don't think that's what he was looking for on this album.
How about you, Greiley?
Yeah, I came to it relatively late and definitely out of chronological order. And so by the time I came to Planet Waves, it became really impossible to listen to it just as its own thing, right? You can't help but put it in the context of what came before and what came after. And it does feel like a really transitional album in certain ways, firmly rooted in Dylan's past, both because he's working again with the band and because so many of the lyrics harken back, it seems, sometimes directly to Duluth, right? But in a lot of ways, back to what feels like his youth in Minnesota. But then, like Rob, it seems in retrospect, in so many ways, to anticipate what it, you have to say, is a superior album. But that's an unfair standard, because how many albums ever made are better than Blood on the Tracks? But yeah, in terms of especially the relationship songs, you feel like you're starting to sense some ambivalence, even more so than is there in New Morning, and seeing certain fractures and fault lines that will turn into yawning chasms by the time we get to Blood on the Tracks. Not that I want to reduce it to purely autobiographical reading. That's always a mistake in Dylan. It's always there in Dylan. He's a personal songwriter, but it's always a mistake to just reduce it to that. But certainly some of the relationship troubles that we know developed outside the studio and offstage feel like they're casting a shadow here as well. And though it's not my original observation, I forget where I got it from. Maybe Paul Williams, maybe Clinton Halen, maybe Michael Gray. But the notion that Dylan is transitioning his whole life out west to Malibu around this time too, and shifting record labels, maybe that personal sort of upheaval helps explain why he's making so many references to his Minnesota youth, because it harkens back to other tumultuous times in his life, which mark a radical shift from one condition, one place, one state of being to another. So it feels like a very transitional album on a lot of levels.
So is there an underrated song on this album, something you think just doesn't get enough attention in the Dylan pantheon of songs?
Non-Forever Young songs on here. I think that as a record, it's beautiful. People complain about the setting because they're not thinking about it as an LP. So it's like, why the two? Y'all get that. But there's a parallel. You've got Hazel and Something There Is About You. Something There Is About You. My God. That's buried in the end of side one. And then you have You Angel You, which I think is a little dismissed, but I think it's great. And my God, Never Say Goodbye. Those sort of songs are completely overshadowed in the kind of the conversation, I think, because Dirge comes in there. Tough Mama, which I have less mileage on Tough Mama than others. I think it hinges on your use of the word crotch. Are the Dylan Thompson into this? Then that's where you fall.
The best use of crotch by a Nobel laureate of all time, I think.
Which has been expurgated from the website. If you look at the lyrics on the website to Tough Mama, they've completely removed.
Really?
They're crotchless.
The verses. They're crotchless. It's really interesting, the lyrics they put up there. And I haven't done the research into, because he played the song somewhere on the Never Ending Tour, like once or twice. And I don't know, but it was like 2001. It was re-copyrighted. So I don't know if this is like a revision of it, but yeah, it's interesting.
Well, and I know that we're focusing just on the album, but because we happen to be recording this just days after the release of the 27 disc Tour 74, which I did not purchase and do not plan to purchase. I just lean on Ray Padgett to tell me what I should listen to. And he's done great work with Tour 74. So major props to Ray Padgett. But I have to say, one of my favorite songs that I have heard from all of those releases is Nobody Except You, which did not make the cut onto the album. And I think it's in Chicago is the version that I've heard. But what a great vocal. He just totally commits to that and completely wins my heart over with every word that he sings in that serenade. What a great tune. It's a shame that he couldn't have come up with that in the studio, because that belongs on this album. It's certainly part of the family, the genetic text of Planet Waves, even if it didn't make the cut onto the album.
I believe Nobody Except You was one of the very first songs he tried to record for the album too. And it just didn't go well for him, for whatever Dylan. What he leaves off is always pretty amazing. Any other thoughts about underrated songs on the album?
I don't know if it falls into the category of underrated, because I've always loved Dirge as a song. And it makes me wish I was a musician, because I feel like probably there is a paper to be written about how Dylan writes differently for piano, or sings differently for piano than guitar songs. But I can't pursue that any further than to say, I bet there's something there. But the thing that really made me think there's a lot more there than I ever gave it credit for was, is there a video component to this at all? Jim?
Yeah, we always put the video on YouTube.
Okay, well, I'll hold this up. But what I'm holding up for those of you who can't see it or just listening to the audio version is Mixing Up the Medicine, that great gigantic coffee table book that was released, was it last year, with certain gems from the Tulsa archives. And wow, what an astounding treasure trove of new information we have about dirge and planet waves from the chapter contributed by Raymond Foy. And he shows, they reproduce one page of an initial handwritten lyrics where Dylan's making multiple references to Leonard Cohen. I'm like, what? Why? There's a conference paper for someone to write, the Leonard Cohen intertext. It's on page 286 and following, for those of you who have the book at home. But yeah, so there are Leonard Cohen references in the original manuscript. But then, my God, some of the outtakes for liner notes that Dylan wrote are astounding. He writes, "Dirge for dying America. The dream gone, cold blue, steel-eyed women of death rising from the ashes of tumult, black vapor, lights out, Haymarket Square, Angola, Tombstone, Sacco and Vanzetti, Ethel and Julius, and the four dead in Ohio. Like the master said, it's not what's here, it's what's left out. It's been a long ride and lots been discarded, abandoned a long way." It's like, whoa, wait, what? And it surprises me that I never picked up on any of this, because I'm usually the first guy to go to an allegorical reading of Dylan. I've got a whole chapter on religious allegory and Time Out of Mind. Rob and I have had multiple conversations with allegorical readings of songs like As I Went Out One Morning or Tears of Rage. And so I'm surprised it never occurred to me. I just dumbly read it like a relationship song. And it is that. But I think that Dylan's doing a lot more in the song than I ever recognized, until this chapter in Mixing Up the Medicine drew my attention to it. And I realized he is, it's another link, another foreshadow, I think, to Blood on the Tracks, because I think he nails that kind of song in a masterpiece like Idiot Wind, which is such a relationship song and yet so much more ambitious than that, right? Is this kind of commentary on Watergate era America. But I guess he was already starting to get that ambitious songwriting, those muscles exercised again on Planet Waves in ways that I had failed to appreciate until Mixing Up the Medicine.
Braley, do we know, are those the, wasn't that supposed to be an insert or something? Or were these, and it was ditched at the last minute? Is that kind of what happened? The
liner? Yeah, I feel like there was an abbreviated version of interesting liner notes put out by Dylan, but not some of the gems that were left off, but that now we have access to thanks to Raymond Foy's research in the archives. Yeah, fast. I don't think there's any, I can never hear that song the same way again after reading this chapter. So,
yeah, I agree. That was a song that really caught my attention this time around. And it was everything Braley has said, buttressed by, of course, those incredible liner notes from Mixing Up the Medicine, is exactly how I feel about the song, because it doesn't, surely Idiot Wind is a song that does it better, but all the elements are there, right? You've got this, it tacks, dirge tacks between this raw confessional mode. The opening verse is like so lacerating. And then this mode that he discovers on Blood on the Tracks. "I went out on Lower Broadway and I felt that place within, the hollow place where martyrs weep and angels play with sin," where something that you might even think of as being part of like Shelter from the Storm or something like that. And then, of course, as Braley was just saying, "So sing your praise of progress in the doom machine. The naked truth is still taboo wherever it can be seen." So he takes the lover's passion and the larger social surroundings and makes the song, forces us to think about this song as a kind of disillusionment with whatever progress might represent in American discourse. And then it ends with this kind of like really bitter, stripped down idiom, right? "I hate myself for loving you, but I shouldn't get over that." And so it mixes up these different modes in a way that is, I don't know if this is correct or not, if Braley would agree, is a little more seamless in Idiot Wind, or kind of flows better, but it, all the elements in dirge are there, that are then amplified and refined in Idiot Wind.
Yeah, and if it's a breakup song with Lady Liberty or America or whatever, I have to put in what otherwise sounds like one of the most misogynistic lines Bob Dylan ever wrote. And though Raymond Foy doesn't comment on it, if you stare carefully enough at the yellow legal pad page reproduced there on page 287, you can read that the initial last line was going to say, "I hate myself for loving you. Now get out of here, you bitch." What? What? That's what's written down there. I'm reading it on the page. So, yeah, I think at least he had the good taste to get rid of that line. But there's only so far an allegorical reading can go, I think, to rescue the kind of snarling rage that comes across at times in a song like this. Yikes.
Wait, to kind of go with that and what you're saying about the cohesiveness of the album, Tony Atwood did a really wonderful analysis. I don't know if you guys have seen it, and that how Dirge and Wedding Song kind of work together. Like, "I love you more than life itself," the first lines, and then how the imagery kind of works. "I hate myself for loving you." And like, there seems to be this parallel where one is really looking at, they're both looking at complexities of relationships, but then you have the one that is obviously the negative aspect of it. And he focuses more on Wedding Song in that analysis, but I thought that was really interesting to pair those two songs together to look at them as point and counterpoint.
Who did you say that was by, Aaron?
Tony Atwood, Until Dylan.
Unfortunately, that's all we have time for here in the public feed. If you'd like to hear the rest of this episode and get access to extended and bonus episodes from this and all of the other shows on the network, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or at fmpods.com.
Thank you for listening to the Dylan Tons Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to have the Dylan Tons sent directly to your inbox. And share the Dylan Tons on social media.